Henry David Thoreau wrote, "If you have made castles in the air, your work need not be lost. That is where they should be. Now put the foundations under them." I cannot tell you how many people over the years have told me that they've discovered Unitarian Universalism at some point in their adulthood, recognized it immediately as the spiritual home they had been looking for, and thought it had to be something new, bursting onto the religious scene like Athena bursting fully formed from the head of Zeus. They're often shocked to know that modern Unitarian Universalism has roots that go back thousands of years. At the Council of Nicaea in 325, a priest named Arius argued that Jesus was not eternal, that he was created by God at a particular point in history, and therefore that Jesus was not God. This heresy is sometimes named after Arius, Arianism, and sometimes by its more technical term, monarchism. By any name, it is the theological position that the Christian God is not three persons, but one. In other words, it is an anti-Trinitarian theology. In other words, it is Unitarian theology. The Unitarian roots of our modern Unitarian Universalism go back to the beginnings of Christianity. So too the roots of our other parent faith, Universalism. During the first 600 years of Christianity, there were six major schools, four of which preached some kind of universalism. This was the belief that no soul would be condemned to eternal damnation, that all souls would, at least eventually, be reconciled to God. There was what was called incremental universalism, where you went to hell but got a chance to burn off your sins and then could go. In other words, four of the six earliest theological traditions within Christianity affirmed some form of universalist theology, some form of universal salvation, some form of universalism. If you have ever thought that modern Unitarian Universalism was something new, an example of creatio ex nihil, creation out of nothing, my Harvard degree has to come in use somewhere. Creatio ex nihil. If you've ever thought that, then you should know that there are some pretty solid foundations under this seeming cloud castle of a religious faith. You should know that we have roots that go really, really deep. And the reason that it's important to know about these roots is because it's hard to understand or to understand fully why we are as we are without knowing at least a little about who we've been. Roots, a person's and institutions, no less than a plant's, feed the organism. And as we all know, you are what you eat, unfortunately. In the Polish Brethren of the 1500s in Rakow, Poland, you can see the seeds of our commitment to the principle of the separation of church and state, a principle they advocated long before Jefferson opined that there should be a wall between them. These early anti-Trinitarians saw all people as kin to one another and believed that within the religious sphere, all should be treated equally, regardless of any religious rank. Our current affirmation of the priest and prophethood of all people, or the recognition that both lay and ordained people are truly ministers with distinct but equal importance, can be traced back to there. And it's around this same time that King John Sigismund of Transylvania was issuing his famous Edict of Tolerance, which declared that within the border of his kingdom, at least, there would be no religious favoritism nor discrimination. In every place it said, the preacher shall preach and explain the gospel, each according to their understanding of it. And if the congregation like it, well. If not, no one shall compel them, for their souls would not be satisfied, but they shall be permitted to keep a preacher whose teachings they approve. No one shall be reviled for their religion by anyone, for faith is a gift from God. The freedom of the pulpit goes back to those times. And while this no doubt was primarily focused on the freedom for anyone within the Christian traditions to be free to hold their views, it should be noted that King John, who, as I like to say, is the only Unitarian king in history so far, was no doubt influenced by his mother, Queen Isabella, who, when her reign was under attack, sought and found safe haven with the Muslim Emperor Saladin. That experience may have affected young John and most certainly affected his mother. So the values of religious freedom, which we cherish so deeply, flow into us through our well-established roots. I could go on talking about educators, social reformers, artists, activists, pioneers, and exemplars of much of the liberal religious and political perspectives that form our faith today. They are legion, and their enumeration can be a source of real pride. Just Google famous Unitarian Universalists, and you will be blown away. Champions of abolition, women's suffrage, humane treatment of people with mental illness, peace, the vision of a united world, humanism, universal literacy, religious freedom, civil rights for people of color and the LGBTQI communities. I could go on. They're all there. It's not new for us. It's part of who we've always been. That's why we are the way we are. That's why it's so important to know our roots, because we cannot understand why we are as we are without knowing at least something about who we've been. And we've been some very good things. Yet those are not our only roots. Rarely are one's roots entirely healthy. I've said here before that on my mother's side of the family, I can trace my history back to Berewald, the first Laird of Innes in 1160. The first Laird of Innes. And yet, looking at that same line, I have ancestors who owned slaves. And one, John Harper, according to newspaper accounts of the time, even held a mock lynching on his property. His brother and sister had been murdered, and although evidence pointed to his nephew, it was easier to assume that his black servants had done it. And so he put nooses around their necks and threatened to hang them if they would not tell him the truth. Eventually he let them down, but that's part of my history too. And in our history as a Unitarian Universalist faith, we can look at how wonderful Theodore Parker was, who preached with a gun underneath his pulpit because they knew that in his basement there were slaves, because his was a stop on the Underground Railroad. There's also Millard Fillmore, the president who signed the Fugitive Slave Act into law. That's part of our history. Part of our history, too, is the systematic undermining of promising ministries by and among people of color. That is part of our history. It could have been rooted in places that it's not, because there was intentional cutting of those roots. At the time that we were embracing and affirming and giving life to humanism within this culture, we were also advocating for eugenics, the idea that some are better than others, and that we should manipulate who can give birth so that we increase the likelihood that those some are more. We cannot know why we are as we are without knowing the whole of who we have been. Several years ago, the Unitarian Universalist Association began at its general assemblies to recognize that wherever they were meeting was once someone else's land. And they would invite representatives of the native communities who had lived there and ask their welcome. When we were meeting out in Colorado, I forget which city, I will know that at 11:15, so if you care, come back. Reverend Bill Sinkford not only asked for a welcome, he asked for forgiveness, because it was Unitarian ministers who had gone to those territories to try to civilize those natives. We cannot know why we are as we are if we don't know who we've been. And who we've been is a decidedly mixed bag. And so who we are is a decidedly mixed bag. Every time I praise Unitarian Universalism as a faith tradition from this pulpit, I always begin by saying, at our best, we are this. But we're not always at our best. Within our tradition, within this congregation, we affirm lay ministry and yet often distrust our leaders, lay or ordained. We do not always affirm one another's inherent worth and dignity, nor assume the best of one another. Who we are as a modern faith tradition and as a congregation is a mixed bag. While an embrace of religious diversity is one of the values we espouse, we too can be closed-minded and believe that some religious perspectives, particularly the ones we hold, are better than others. We believe this, and we demonstrate it with our actions. Within this congregation, there are people who will not say what they believe because they believe that what they would say would make them unwelcome. Our faith tradition, our congregation, is a mixed bag. We cannot know why we are the way we are without knowing who we are and where we've been. Yet it's important for us to remember that who we've been and who we are directs but does not dictate where we're going. If we pretend that our rotten roots do not exist, we can never excise them. And we can never ensure that they are not what leads us forth. We have deep, strong, beautiful roots. And we have deep, strong, gnarled, and rotten roots. That's who we are. Not at our best. Who we are. If we can own that, we might be better than we are.